On this episode of the Autumn Windbags, RJ is brought, any RJ talks in the third person, is broadcasting live from Singapore. That's fun. Where does Derek Carr rank amongst the best quarterbacks in the NFL? Soto's answer might surprise you. What does Cooper Kupp's contract extension tell us about Hunter Renfro's upcoming extension? Some news and notes from minicamp. And the Broncos finally got adopted by somebody who loves them. And we love when you subscribe, rate, and comment on whatever platform you're listening on. All right. Here we go.
I got a dream of winning a Super Bowl. I got a dream of being in a Pro Bowl. I'm really not into dreams anymore, okay? I'm into nightmares. The Raiders!
Caught! Touchdown! Raiders!
You're listening to the Autumn Windbags, an audio attack from the Silver and Black. Here are your windbags, RJ Clifford and Juan Soto. Yeah, it is another episode of the Autumn Windbags. RJ Clifford, Juan Soto, let's have some fun today. Away show for me.
Yeah.
Not in Las Vegas, not in New York, in Singapore. I didn't know where Singapore was either. Very southeast tip of Southeast Asia. It's like just below Malaysia. It's a little island nation. And the UFC is doing UFC 275 this Saturday. So I'm out here working. Little makeshift studio.
Yeah. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to find a Singapore phone number, and I'm going to be like, yeah, RJ's been messing up. He's been chewing gum and spinning it on the ground. I just want to get the video of him getting caned a couple times.
Dude, here are some of the rules in Singapore. Walking around naked in your own house is illegal. You can chew gum, but you can't litter it. It's like a major fine. Smoking is forbidden almost everywhere in Singapore. You can't make noise after 10 p.m., it's illegal not to flush your toilet, and it's illegal to connect to someone else's Wi-Fi. Like, this is why it's one of the cleanest cities in the world and like well-run cities in the world, because it's so small they can just be like, it's like a Catholic mom how she runs her household. It's just like every little rule. It's great.
It's like the chick in high school is a total freaking skank, mm-hmm. And then when she gets like she shits out a couple of kids and on her third marriage, and she's like, okay, that's it. I need to straighten up my life, and I'm going to raise these kids.
You're all going to school. Yeah. You're going to start learning how to do laundry.
I'm going to raise these kids the way I was never raised. It's just like extra strict. We're like, wait a second. That tramp stamp, I've seen that tramp stamp before.
Thank God booze is super expensive, because then it's like harder for me to get hammered here. Otherwise, I'd be breaking all those rules constantly.
Oh, yeah. You'd be walking around naked, spitting gum on your dick, all kinds of stuff.
Trying to connect on strangers' Wi-Fi, being all screwed up. So it was 23 hours of travel to get here, door to door. I left my house in Long Beach, took the Uber at 9:15 a.m., 45 minutes to LAX, 2 hours way to LAX, 14-hour flight to Seoul, Korea, 2-hour layover in Korea, 7-hour flight to Singapore, 1 hour in customs, 20-minute drive to hotel, checked in around midnight Wednesday local time. And so right now it's Thursday morning or Thursday at noon. Currently, it is 9 o'clock at night, California time.
Jeezer.
So I'm going on no sleep, but happy to do so. Beautiful view from my balcony, by the way. There's like these like crazy hotels. It's on my Instagram. I'll put it. All these like hotels, and there's this one hotel where it's three pillars and then like a big like building on top of it. It's kind of wild. Crazy.
Interesting.
Anyway, you guys don't care about Singapore. You want to talk Raiders stuff. Question of the day, and we will put this question pinned down in the comment section, and we're very curious what you guys think. Where does Derek Carr rank with the best quarterbacks in the NFL? Where would you rank him? Because there's been a new ranking out. Chris Sims does his top 40 quarterback countdown every year. Like, you can always tell when there's like a slow time in the NFL offseason. That's when everyone does their like
rankings and
yeah, predictions, like top 50 players with the cutest dogs list, like all this random stuff. And this is where Chris Sims is his top 40. And he just recently released 9 through 12, and he went 12 Kyler Murray, 11 Derek Carr, 10 Lamar Jackson, 9 Dak Prescott. And a little blurb they took of Sims talking about Derek Carr at number 11, he says, quote, the ultimate field general. What is negative about Derek Carr? He's done more at the line of scrimmage than any other quarterback in football the last 2 years. He's got size, he's mobile, and he has a very good arm. You can win a Super Bowl with this guy. I have a lot of respect for the adjustments he's made in his career, not only personality-wise, but some physical adjustments that have made him better. Davante Adams came to the Raiders for one reason, Derek Carr. So when you saw Sims rank Derek Carr at number 11, how furious were you that he even dared put him in his top 40 and actually like gave him some love?
Like, no, that's about where he is.
Were you banging your head on a desk?
No.
Kicking puppies. No, you weren't pissed. No, they ranked him number 11.
That's what I said. He's in that, 11, 12, 13-ish, in that little range, depending on the situation, on who's playing, on how the year went. He's going to be in that area right in there. That's where he's going to be.
I think that's a big part of rankings, too, is so often quarterback rankings aren't how good is this quarterback? Like, let's say everything is equal, right? Let's say every single quarterback played with the same wide receivers, the same O-line, same coach, same, like,
the same defense.
Imaginary world. Yeah, like this imaginary world. Which quarterback is best? But that's such a like useless ranking. Even though you'd want to know just who the better quarterback is. Generally, I feel like quarterback rankings are a prediction on how well that quarterback's going to play next season. Mm-hmm. And of course, that has everything to do with weapons and coach and scheme and your opponents, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I feel like that's what Chris Sims does here, because like Dak Prescott, I think, has proven he has to have everything go his way to be good, and he has him ranked above Derek Carr. Mm-hmm. So I think Chris Sims does exactly that. He just kind of ranks how well he thinks this offense is going to be next season, and the quarterback's like the mascot of that ranking.
Yeah, I mean, in reality, all you can do is rank the quarterback plus the situation. Mm-hmm. And I think, like you said, that's really what's going on here. You're ranking the situation because, like you said, Dak Prescott with nobody to throw to, he's not going to be ranked ahead of Derek Carr. He's not going to be ranked ahead of a lot of guys.
He had three wide receivers last season that would have been our number one wide receiver last season.
Yeah. And so, I mean, basically what he's ranking is he's projecting production. That's what he's projecting. And I mean, I can't argue with it. We have to see a couple things improve from Carr to jump him into that solidified top 10, no doubt, area. And hopefully we see those things, but we haven't seen it yet. So, it's maybe some of the guys that are ahead of Carr have been a little bit more consistent because they've had a more consistent situation, and that's helped them be more consistent.
Every quarterback in football has had a more consistent situation than Derek Carr. And that's what's crazy, right? Like,
yeah, no quarterback has been asked
to go through what Derek Carr has been asked to go through, right? No quarterback in NFL history has had six different head coaches in 9 years. The way, and not just like new head coaches, but like coaches imploding, right? Mm-hmm. John Gruden, like he's lost his number one wide receiver like almost every season, like other than like next season will be a new one number one receiver. Like every single year, like it's whether it's Ruggs or like the 2016 crew, like we lost Jared Cook.
He just
loses his number one receiver every single season. His line's never good. The defense is never good.
Well, and I wouldn't say his line's never good. He had a good lineup until last year.
Good point. Historically, like he's had really bad lines and he's always had terrible defenses. So it's pretty crazy to me that you rank quarterbacks by production and what you predict they're going to produce. And everyone still kind of puts there, not everyone, but like you said, I think the general gist is like 10 to 13. I think
in that range. Yeah. Normally
you take the average, like just outside the top 10, like just outside, just
right outside. Yeah.
Considering everything he's gone, I think that's one of the biggest testaments to a quarterback in a long time is that a quarterback in a dumpster fire for his entire 9 year career, everyone still is like, yeah, he's just outside the top 10. You can win a Super Bowl.
But a lot of things have to go a lot better than they have been. And I mean, and also to Carr's credit, because of that uncertainty, you've seen a lot of wild inconsistency in his play. Because on one side, you could say, oh, he's gone through so much. On the other side is, how long have you seen a quarterback that loses as much as Derek Carr has lost stick around and be the quarterback of the same team for 9 years? So
I think that's a credit to how bad the Raiders have been the last 9 years, is that he has a losing record, but literally no quarterback has gone through the shit he's gone through. So you're like, okay, that's not It hasn't been Carr's fault. It hasn't been Carr's fault. It hasn't been Carr's fault. Let's keep him around. And if anything, he's proven that he's probably the best quarterback in football to handle a dumpster fire. Like, imagine if Aaron Rodgers or Russell Wilson or Tom Brady, or like some of these diva quarterbacks, had all Kyler Murray, like, had all these shit go wrong. Carr never wavers, still leaders. Zay Jones is my number one receiver? Okay. Nelson Aguilar is my number one receiver? Okay. Like, whatever you give me, like, I'll make it work, right? And I think that's not – obviously, you want a quarterback that does well in great times and takes you to the promised land.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're in a dumpster fire, Derek Carr's proven, like, last season was the best example. Like, everything that could go wrong in a season went wrong, and we stole into the playoffs, mm-hmm. right? Like, I think he's – I don't think there's any quarterback better in history that, all right, if nothing's going right on the team, nothing's going right in the front office, nothing's going right in the coach's office, Derek Carr is an arrow, and he can handle it.
Yeah, leadership-wise in the locker room, for sure, 100%. I'm not going to argue with that at all. On the field-wise, that could be debated. You know, we've talked a lot about how the Raiders really can't handle or haven't been able to handle success very well, get off the hot starts and then just tumble. And it's not all the defense, and it's not all the other things. A lot of times, you know, it's I mean, I don't want to say a lot, but it's been Carr's play as much as anything else. So I would say for sure 100% on the field, I mean, off the field, leadership wise in the locker room. Yes, you are 100% right. If you're going to have a guy drop into a shitty situation organization-wise, yeah, Derek Carr is the guy to be able to kind of, you know, steady the ship and see what's on the other side. Because right now, we don't know if it's Derek Carr's fault or not. We don't know because there are so many variables and so many unknowns and so many things that need to be kind of tweaked and adjusted and fixed at the same time. He had, you know, hey, he had an O-line that was good. His defense was still bad. He had receivers that were catching the ball. You know, he had a couple of good receivers, 2-3 receivers that were, you know, pretty good. And then the next season they couldn't, you know, catch a cold. Right. So it's like, you seem to be things seem to be lining up a little bit better for him right now. So, you know, hopefully we get to get a clearer view. I think that's why there's a lot of discussion on Derek Carr, is because there's been so many unknowns. It's like, you can't really pin 100% yes or no. It's just
you can't compare apples to apples. Derek Carr to other quarterbacks. You can't compare Derek Carr to Dak Prescott. Like, absolutely opposite situation, like production wise, right? Like, it's impossible.
Just like you can't say he's worse, you can't say he's better, because you just really don't know. You really don't.
I also love Chris Sims's like specifics about him, because like we were all like for the longest time we're all kind of chasing the 2016 Derek Carr, right? Number 3 in MVP voting. Mm-hmm. You know, Crabtree, Cooper, like. Oh, that was the year, right? That, and also because it was the first time in like 15 years we went to the playoffs when we were good, right? So we're all kind of like chasing that high, right? Mm-hmm. It's like when you, I don't know, like if you just start experimenting in drugs and maybe you've only drank beer for the longest time. And
that then first, like, hit of opium, you're just like, oh.
Yeah, or you're just like Adderall. Like,
not that I've done that.
Great, right? Like, that's 2016 Derek Carr. It's the only drug we know. And so we're all kind of like chasing that one high. The Derek Carr now, or even last year, so much better than Derek Carr of 2016, even though the 2016 one had the production.
In between the ears, 100%.
But I think every part of him, like you look at Chris Sims' evaluation of him, like you said, ultimate field general, like we can all agree he's the, if not the best, one of the best guys pre-snap. But then he also said the adjustments he's made, like he called him mobile. He said he's mobile, which is different than like
running. I don't agree with that.
I do. The way he moves in the pocket is so much better.
How can you tell when he checks down so often?
He's not Johnny Checkdown anymore. He isn't. Look,
it's 1 year that's an outlier off of a lot of years. Look, I'm not talking shit on Derek Carr. I'm trying to be realistic here. He is not a mobile quarterback. And you know what? I don't want it to be a mobile quarterback, because he's going to fumble more if he's more of a mobile quarterback.
He's not a running quarterback. He can in the best case scenario, but he's not a running quarterback, but he's a mobile quarterback. Like, he moves in the pocket so fluidly now.
Okay, well then say he's mobile in the pocket.
I think that's the definition of mobile, as opposed to like, no, can run.
No, mobile is you can run.
Or super mobile. Just if, like if, general, no. It's like one adjective.
No.
Or verb.
If you have to qualify it, then you have to be a little bit better with the description, a little bit more accurate.
I think mobile is accurate as long as you don't go overboard. Super mobile, running quarterback, can't be taken down. Like, he's none of that stuff, but he can move, he can wiggle in the pocket a little bit.
I'm not saying he can't. What I'm saying is when he does, normally, I mean, last year was a little bit different maybe because he just like, fuck it, I got a bunch of no names out here, I'm just gonna fling it. He checked it down a lot. And that is one thing before last year. And if you remember what I was saying from before last year, that's one thing that got progressively worse after his ankle injury was he checked down a ton more after that. Maybe it's because he's like, you know what, I'm better to this team on the field, I can't be getting hurt type of thing. But that last year he raised his average yards per attempt. So that's definitely something that he turned around. Hopefully, yeah, I'm looking to see that go again.
Top three deep ball passers in football last season. Right?
Okay, that's different than having a good yards per attempt. That's a completely different stat.
That's why I said it.
No, because you're trying to add on to it. Like, yeah, he could be a good deep ball passer. You just not throw the ball that deep, but when you do, you connect. It's different than having a good average yards per attempt.
Is there any part of Chris Sims' evaluation you disagree with?
The mobile thing, I'm not super in agreement with him, but everything else, yeah. Everything else I agree with.
And these are all things that we wouldn't have said about Derek Carr in 2016. You know what I mean? He wasn't the ultimate field general. He wasn't mobile.
The leadership stuff, you know what? I don't think a lot has changed, man, honestly. I'm thinking back to that time, and I think we were all ready for his third year to be primed up because we saw that dumpster fire of the first year when they went 0-10 or something like that to start the year, and he was the first one to throw dirt on that football. Let's go. Mm-hmm. You know, I remember that. So yeah. He was the first guy to jump up, get a shovel full of dirt and throw it on the football, bury those first 10 games, and let's just win the rest of these games, right? So he's always been that field general. He's always been that guy that takes command. I think he's gotten better.
He's always had the good attitude of a field general, but like any other human being who does something longer, he's gotten so much smarter, right? Nine seasons.
Oh, yeah, I agree. But I wouldn't say he wasn't a field general or a good leader in his third year. I think he definitely was. As far as doing more at the line of scrimmage, I think that's progressed every single year. And, I mean, I hate to say it, but thanks to John Gruden, he's learned a lot. He's got a lot better at the line of scrimmage. Let's see here. The size is the same size.
I'd say the two biggest things Gruden added to him was movement in the pocket. I think Gruden made that a priority, and I think it worked. And just smarter pre-snap. Just another smart coach to kind of just add to what he already knows pre-snap.
Yeah, in Spanish, you would call that a huevo, which is like by your
balls. I thought huevos were your balls.
Yeah, it's like, okay. That's like, he got better pre-snap because he had to. Like, Gruden's like, this is what you have to do at the line of scrimmage, so you must get better pre-snap. And he did.
What is it with Chris Sims' rankings that everyone takes his gospel? Like, when Derek Carr's rank came out and when they did 9 through 13, every media member is just like, oh, this is great. Oh, this is terrible. It was like people were treating it like gospel. Like rankings, quarterback rankings come out every day from different outlets. And yet the Chris Sims ones, everyone's getting all hot and bothered about. Is Chris Sims like, is he the gospel when it comes to quarterback rankings?
I think it's more like the strip tease style because like he did it in sections, which is pretty smart because you build that anticipation. And as you know, the outside the top 10, that's usually like 9, 10, 11, like 12, like in that range. That's usually like, okay, he's a top 10. He's not a top 10 because why? Because he's number 11, right? So that kind of range is probably the most talked about because the first 6, 7, like we know who they're going to be. Who's it going to be? Brady, Rodgers, Mahomes, what's his name? Allen. That's four right there. Burrow. Joe Namath, I don't know.
Herbert.
Russell Wilson.
Everyone in the AFC.
Everybody in the AFC West. Is this like the best collection of quarterbacks ever in a division?
100%. When the worst one is people rank him as
a top 10-ish around 11? There?
Yeah, like he's arguably top. Arguably, you can make a case that he's top 10, and he's the.
I mean, trajectory wise, you probably three Hall of Famers for sure. Maybe four, three probably for sure.
Herbert's got the makings.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Trajectory wise,
Wilson,
yeah,
it's like, yeah, Wilson for sure. So where would you rank Derek Carr? Do you have right a hard ranking, or are you cool with like 10 to 13?
You know, 11, 12, 13, 10. If he has to knock a lot of guys out to get to number 10, and he can definitely do it this year, and I hope he does. But right now, as I'm looking at things without seeing him play on the field, I would say, yeah, that, you know, 10 to 13 ish around that area.
I'd put him 10 because I think he's better than Prescott. So I think Sims's ranking is pretty good. I think he's better than Murray. I don't think he's better than Lamar, but I do think he's better than Dak, because Dak has to have everything right to be even pretty good. And Carr can be pretty good even when everything's wrong. And I think that's a big asset as a quarterback. So I officially, as of right now, June 8th, 2022, in the year of our Lord, I have Carr exactly number 10.
I'm not going to argue. I mean, he's right in that range, you know.
Which is higher than I thought I'd put him when this show started. Like, I was similar to you. Like, we fight about Derek Carr all the time, but I think 83%.
No, we do agree. We agree a lot.
Is the same. We just drastically disagreed what to do with him for the longest time. Now though, like, now with his extension, now with McDaniels, Devontae, like, he's so solidified in a spot where the idea of,
I mean, next year at least,
gone, right? Like, yeah, like that's gone.
Well, and next so year he's solidified. The rest of the years are not guaranteed. So, like, I mean, that's the reason. Like, in my last live show, I posed a question. Okay, Carr had a lot of excuses. I'm not saying whether they're valid or not valid, but there were some excuses out there, or there were some reasons out there. Let's just put it that way, that he maybe wasn't as successful as he could have been. A lot of those have been addressed. Not every single one, because you really can't address every single thing. You know, you only have so much money, so much time, so much assets. Okay.
Yeah.
But things are getting better, and some of the things that, you know, were needed to be, like, offensive line should be better. The defense should be a whole lot better. Better scheme. Yeah, we'll see. But I mean, if you look at
it's just giant question marks, right?
Yeah.
Like this is the weird part going into next season. Derek Carr is like the only consistent. It's like Crosby, Carr.
But he's been consistently inconsistent. He's been consistently inconsistent. So you don't know if
I'm
not talking on everybody off. Quarterback. I don't play that game. Everybody does it. I can do it. No, Derek Carr has been inconsistent. So when we get more consistency around him, what's going to happen? Is he going to be the exact same guy that we've seen, inconsistent, or is he going to just jump and ball out? My question was, given the time he's had, given what you've seen of him, if these things around him tend to pan out, better scheme, better coaching, better weapons, a better defense, and his play doesn't increase, he's kind of just the same guy, what do you do from there? You know, is that enough to stick around? That's the question that I posed. And then I gave examples of a bunch of quarterbacks who played for a team for at least three seasons, who had success, who had more success than Derek Carr did, but the team moved on from him because they felt like he wasn't the guy. So that's the question that I posed, and I got just spit on by everybody. I'm like, whoa, I didn't say he wasn't going to perform. I didn't say I didn't want him to perform. The exact opposite. He's already in-house. We already have him under contract. Yes, I would like him to perform. I would like him to just play to jump up. Just asking that question, people think I'm being negative. I'm like, no, I'm just posing a question. A crazy conversation.
You are almost always negative about Carr. Like, whatever the direction it can go in, you go in the negative one.
No, but that was the question asked. That was the question asked, though. And I even prefaced it. Like, look, I'm not saying that he is or isn't. I'm asking a question, and I'm asking, you know, and I'm showing examples.
And I would argue the exact opposite. There's so many question marks next season. Derek Carr is like one of the only consistent parts of it. So, like, when you say, let's say we take off next season. Maybe it's Josh McDaniels' offensive scheme. Maybe it's Devontae Adams blowing everything, making everything. Maybe Patrick Graham does gasp, makes the Raiders' defense average or better, right? Mm-hmm. Like, new special teams coordinator. That's the thing, is Derek Carr is the only consistent thing the last 9 years. Literally everything else changes. Almost everything else is changing next season. So it's, once again, it's impossible to compare apples to apples with Derek Carr, because even under his own team, things drastically change every single season.
Yeah, so, but and that's my question, though. My question is, if you don't see a marked improvement in Derek Carr's – in Derek Carr, maybe not the team so much because he can only do what he could do, right? In his production, if you don't see a marked improvement with all these improvements around him, then what do you do? And that was just a question that was asked. And I just said, you're a fucking hater, this and that, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like – and this guy came out. He's like, yeah, he's better than Dan Marino. I'm like, dude – come on, dude, a freaking first ballot Hall of Famer, and don't compare their stats because it's a different fucking game. Like, you were able to get fucking your shit pushed in when Dan Marino played. Like, you can't do that now. And it was tough. It was tough to kind of, like, keep it about the question and not about, oh, you're hating Derek Carr. And
what I would say is there's too many variables to say. Like, let's say Derek Carr, you know, throws for 400 less yards this season than last season. Random, you know what I mean? Let's say that number, right? 400 less yards. It's impossible to just look at the numbers and say it was Derek Carr's fault, because there's so many other question marks. Like, maybe the McDaniels scheme is just doesn't work. Hunter Renfrow, Devontae Adams, Darren Waller can't grasp it. The line is just trash, right? Like, it would have to be a tape question. You can compare stats to stats. Unless there's something drastic, right? Let's say he throws three picks next season. You're like, oh, Jesus, wow, he really got that thing under control, right?
Then Aaron Rodgers and throws like 45 touchdowns and six picks, you know?
Yeah, like it's like, you know, unless it's a drastic stat, like a crazy drastic stat, I don't think the stats can tell the difference in Derek Carr's play, because everything else around him changed so much. And that would be my point, is a pure numbers to numbers. It'd be part of the conversation, right? Absolutely part of the conversation, as it should always. But I think with everything being so different, that's just pure stats. You just can't do apples to apples.
I agree with that, just in if you look at it from a smaller point of view. But if you broaden that out and say, okay, his stats may have not increased or stayed the same or decreased a tad, but how did the offense do? How did he do at leading the offense?
And that's what's most important, right? Most important is, how is this offense going to perform next season? And that's all
the stuff that I put into play. Like, look, how does he do it? Does he improve in the red zone? How is the running game improved because of X or Y or whatever? Like, how does the offense run? If you don't see it happening, if it doesn't pass the eye test, what do you do? And I really do think that we're going to find out a lot, because Derek Carr is not dumb. He is a smart fucking guy, and he has this like unworldly mind when it comes to NFL offenses. He's had to master so many. He knows so much. And by all accounts, Josh McDaniels is a really good teacher. He's going to implement things that are going to be easy for Derek Carr, not only to master, but to run. He's not going to call things that Derek Carr is not going to be successful doing, or the team for that matter. He's going to stick to things that the team can do well. He's going to incorporate that into a game plan. He's going to adjust that game plan every week. So I have a lot of confidence that we're going to be able to see a truer version of who Derek Carr is offensively. Maybe like you said, hopefully this doesn't happen, but if the defense is still complete dog shit and we lose a lot of close games because of it, okay. But how did the offense, how did that side of the ball perform? We're gonna find out a lot this year.
So that's the question of the day. Where does Derek Carr rank with the best quarterbacks in the NFL? I say exactly number 10. Soto's the, you know, 12, 13 ish. She's not,
I said 10, 11, 12, 13. I said in that 10, range. 11, 12,
so 11 to 13 ish.
Around there. Yeah.
What say you guys? It's down pinned in the comments section. Where's Derek Carr rank amongst the best quarterbacks in the NFL? So Cooper Kupp got his bag, baby.
He got that bag. He's holding his ball bag. He's holding everything. He's got everything.
The Rams signed Kupp to a 3-year, $80 million contract extension, which by itself isn't a crazy number, but it's the guaranteed money that's crazy. The contract includes 75 of the $80 million guaranteed and worth $110 million over 5 years. It's the highest amount of guaranteed money ever to an NFL wide receiver. So I have two big takes out of this. One, I'll tease one, and I'll maybe I'll do two real quick. One, I think this may hint as to what Hunter Renfrow may get when we're 95% sure he's getting extended. I'm going to put the positive vibes out there. Mm-hmm. Well, we can say when. I'm going to say when Hunter Renfrow gets extended. I'm confident enough in that. And two, I keep going back to all the people that were pissed with how much we gave Davante Adams, both the trade for him, the two first rounders, mm-hmm. and the amount of money we gave him. We're what, a month and a half since he came? And he went from the highest paid to he's already like third or fourth highest paid in like a month and a half. And Derek Carr got paid less because of it. And he keeps getting passed up. Davante Adams is going to look like a steal this time next season. Mark my words.
Yeah, there's a lot of guys that are going to get paid, you know, with these quarterbacks that are popping up everywhere. They got to throw to somebody. They got to make somebody. Somebody's got to make them look good. Somebody's got to catch those touchdowns and catch those yards. And you're seeing a lot of weapons out there. And those tippy-top guys, they're pretty fucking good. Because even like the second-tier guys, those guys are still pretty damn good. Because I consider Renfrow one of like those second-tier guys. And he's pretty fucking good. So he can go to a lot of teams and he can make them a lot better. So if you're one of those top guys, there's probably a good 15 to 18 like top wide receivers in the league, because I mean production wise there's a ton out there. So yeah, these guys are going to come up, and that's how it all, even with like we just saw with quarterbacks are going to get paid, and then the next one up comes and it's a little bit more. As four, five, six, seven of them get paid, you look back and you're like, holy shit, that guy's a bargain.
Yeah, Davante Adams is already fourth in guaranteed money for wide receivers. Already fourth in guaranteed money. So what does this contract tell us about when Hunter Renfrow gets extended, whenever that may be? It could be tomorrow. It can be towards the end of next season, but it's going to be within that time range, more or less. What does this contract say about Hunter Renfrow? Because they play a similar role, right? Slot guy. You know, everyone like looks at the little white slot wide receivers the same. Like they're always like they all get compared to each other because they're white and like scrappy and like they're slot receivers.
And they're white.
I got to imagine Hunter Renfrow's agent is pretty stoked about that. Now he's not the number one receiver on the team the way Cooper Kupp is. Didn't have he almost broke the record for receptions this season. But you got to imagine that. Maybe you got to imagine when Hunter Renfrow's agent goes to Ziegler and says, all right, extension talks, Cooper Kupp's contract is going to be brought up.
Yeah, it's going to be brought up as a comparison. So if you want to do like a Cooper Kupp light contract, I don't see the years probably are going to be similar as far as
5 years.
It's the three extension. So I mean, yeah, I could see a 5 year, but
5 years. That's what I'm saying. He already had 2 years, extended another three with the $75 million guaranteed. So,
yeah, I mean, I could see it be 4 or 5. Yeah, I could see that. But I mean, I think that percentage wise of guaranteed money, I think it's going to be similar. Maybe not, 95% of it guaranteed, but it'll be higher. You're seeing that in receivers now, because receivers are having a little bit more longevity in the league, and again, just like Davante Adams, he's not a blazing speed guy, and that's what he uses to get open. He uses timing, he uses footwork, he uses route running, so that's what he uses to get open. So that lends to a little bit longer shelf life as far as being at your top. Mm-hmm. I could see him getting maybe like 80% of his money, 75-80% of his money guaranteed. Again, I don't see it being, an $80 million extension, 75 guarantee. But even after a year, even after a couple of guys have been paid, but I can see it being, maybe not 26.6 a year, but being closer to like the 18-ish around there.
I think Renfrow's going to get a 5 year. And I think the contract's going to be like around the $100 million range, not guaranteed, $100 million-ish range. But super backloaded with like $60 million guaranteed. Everyone on the Raiders, Derek Carr, you know, brought up multiple times. Crosby, even you get little whispers of it from like the front office. Like they all like took contracts for the express purpose of making sure to sign Hunter Renfrow and Darren Waller. Like they, and nobody put their money where their mouth was, like Derek Carr, obviously, right? And even Crosby's contract isn't insane for a Pro Bowl defensive end just entering his prime. Like last season is nowhere near. Watch, Max Crosby's season last season, as good as it was, mark my words, won't even be like top three of his best seasons in his career. Like that's the trajectory that he's on. And so that's why I feel like Renfrow will get a quality deal, but I think it'll be similar to what Crosby got ranked by his peers. Mm-hmm. I think Renfrow, the ultimate team player, is seeing how Derek Carr took that type of contract. Crosby took that kind of contract. He's like, okay, I can probably scrap and play dirty and get 125 mil, but I'm happy with 100 mil backloaded, you know, 60 mil guaranteed. Like you're going to, you know, he's going to make $18, $20 million a year, right? I don't see him fighting to make sure he makes 24 and a half type of thing.
I'm thinking like if it's 18, so if he was 5 years, 90 million, 65 guaranteed.
So we're about the same. You have a little bit more guarantee. You have a little more.
And again, you want guaranteed anyway. So yeah. I think that's about what he's going to get. Devontae got what, 22 and change, something like that.
And you go and you play the long game. You play the 5 years. I could even see them doing like 6 or 7, because then you pay less per season.
I don't know.
You pay less per season, but
that's tough, man. He's smaller still, dude. Like you don't. Yeah. He's a smaller guy, and that you have to take that into account. Not that it's tough, man. It's a big man's game, and he's still a smaller guy. Hopefully, you know he does last that long.
Some void years at the end.
Sure. Yeah, you can always work it out. And Ziegler's not going to handcuff himself with some bullshit. So, but yeah, if I had to put my stamp on something, I'd say about 18 a year, 5-18 a year. So that's 90 with about 60-65 guaranteed around there.
Yeah, so I think Cooper Kupp's contract will be a little bit of a outline, like more or less, mm-hmm. like kind of a version of it. But this is another part too. So Hunter Renfrow is unique in the sense of his role in the offense, right? So Rory thinks that we hate Hunter Renfrow because we said the offense isn't at its best when Hunter Renfrow is the number one receiver last season. When
I hate him so much, I gave him $90 million a year, or $90 million in 5 years. That's why, how much I hate that motherfucker.
Number one target, number one in receptions, number one in yards. The offense isn't firing on all cylinders. And so Rory, because he's a short white guy like Hunter Renfrow, he's Hummer Renfro's biggest fan.
Hummer.
And he can do no wrong, right? And this is, and you, and we had a text chain back and forth between the three of us, and you guys were fighting over some stuff, but I think you both missed the point. Here's my example.
Okay.
Here's an example. Soto, who do you think's the best free safety in football? I'm not going to hold you to the numbers. Give me an example. Best free safety in football.
Derwin James. I don't know.
Derwin James. Okay, fine. Derwin James. When Derwin James, and again, let's say he was in Gus Bradley's defense like last season. If Derwin James, best free safety in football, is leading your defense in tackles, your defense is not running properly. It's not running properly, right? We're not blaming Derwin James. We're not saying, oh, he's bad. It's no, you don't want your free safety leading the team in tackles, because that means these running backs are getting to 8, 10, 12 yards before they're getting tackles. That means that these wide receivers are catching the ball deep, and he's the one saving the touchdown, making the tackles. You want your linebacker to be the leading guy in tackles, especially in a Gus Bradley system, right? Same thing last year. In John Gruden's system, if your slot wide receiver is your number one wide receiver, that means they're working on their like fourth or fifth option. That's not how the offense is supposed to run. It's supposed to run through a big X, the tight end, power running game. And so that was my point with Hunter Renfrow. It was like, Hunter Renfrow's amazing, beautiful. Like I just said, I'm willing to commit 7 years to him. Fucking love the guy. Returns punts. He can play free safety for us. We've seen him.
Fuck your sister, you said.
But exactly. But last season, if he's the one leading everything, that means three or four first options weren't working. And that's why when Hunter Renfrow, now this season could be different because we've seen what a slot receiver can do in a Josh McDaniels system, Wes Welker, et cetera, right? So maybe this season could be different, especially when if defenses are double teaming Devontae and Waller, it's like, we'll throw the ball 20 times
a game. Exactly my point.
20 times a game we'll throw to Hunter Renfrow if he's being single covered. Like, hell yeah. But last season, to my point, you don't want your free safety leading the team in tackles. You don't want your slot receiver in a John Gruden system to lead the team in receptions, yards, etc.
Yeah, and you know, the big so Rory tries to play this game. Okay, well, what's your definition of a number one? Well, there is no true definition of a number one receiver because these number one receivers sometimes do things a lot better than other things. But they're just a lot, they're just so much better at the things that they do well that yeah. It allows them to be highlighted in that sense. I said, okay, one of my big things was this guy can go be thrown to any down, any distance. And I said that Hunter Renfrow is not that big of a deeper threat because he's not that big of a receiver. He's not that jumping, you know, high point type of receiver guy that can get those deep passes. He's more of a across the middle, short to intermediate type receiver. And when you line up outside one-on-one against the best guy, one of the best guys in the league, you got to be able to run the entire route tree and beat the guy in front of you any route. Mm-hmm. And I don't see that out of Hunter Renfrow. And it's not a slight on him. It's just I haven't seen it. And trust me, if a guy could do something, he would be asked to do it, especially you know, after a few years in the NFL. That's why I say, look, I don't think he's a number one. I think he's a really high number two. And I think in a pinch, he can do a lot for you as far as get targeted like a number one. And that's why I said, because Devontae Adams probably going to catch a lot of doubles. So is Waller. It's a matchup nightmare. He may get number one type production, but not because he's a number one guy per se.
I would say he can be a number one guy in a Josh McDaniels system. He shouldn't be a number one guy in the Gruden system. And I think that was the big point that was getting missed in that conversation. So day two of the mandatory minicamp is in the books. Again, we're recording this Wednesday night, so Tuesday and Wednesday. First time mandatorily they had to be there. Every single player on the roster was there. Not every single player contributed. So we've got some news and notes of what we know about training camp the last 2 days. Not a lot of major news out of training camp, which I think it's partially because the beat writers, they're all like two football fields away and they're not really talking to players. They're only hearing the presser and they're literally on binoculars to try to see what's going on. So we're not seeing like major news out of camp, which is not good or bad. Just kind of how it works.
Is what it is.
But here's a couple news and notes. Here's our new linebacker coach, Antonio Pierce, on what Denzel Perryman brings on the field.
Have you not seen his PJs that he wears to morning meetings too? It kind of threw me off. He wears his hat. I mean, he's got swag. He's from Miami, right? He's a proud Hurricane. I've known him for a while, obviously, maybe not on a personal level, but from afar. What he brings, not only just, you know, with swag, but attitude, professionalism, and I'll say more important, leadership. You know, when he talks, the room gets a little bit quieter. Right. And you want that from somebody in your defense. And you really like it from the linebacker position. Right. Being biased a little bit. You want the meat and the heart of your room in that of your team in that linebacker room. And he really carries that. And obviously he has fun doing it. I think that makes, you know, my job easier as well.
Is Denzel Perryman the unquestioned leader of the defense next season?
I think he might start that way. Yeah. If I'm not saying he can hold it the entire year. He's going to be asked.
Who would take it over him?
Crosby, Chandler Jones. The thing that we have to realize here is you have to realize the system that Patrick Graham runs, that kind of base off of a, you know, cover two style system. And Perryman doesn't do well covering in space. It's just not his deal. If he's only playing a couple downs, you know, first, second down, you know, it's hard to say right now because we haven't seen the defense.
I'm saying he is unquestionably the leader of the defense. He may not be the best player on the defense, but I think personality wise and the role that the strong side linebacker needs to be in a Patrick Graham system. I think he's the number one guy with a bullet. So it's like Crosby, like a maybe no leader by example on the defense. Mm-hmm. Like he's like the hardest worker. He's doing these like Von Miller's like training, like defensive end training camp, like work ethic wise. I think that, but I think Perryman would just like his swagger personality coming off of a Pro Bowl. I think he's unquestionably the leader in the defense. We'll see.
You know, it's funny, real quick, I was watching the press conference, right? So Perryman goes up there, he talks, and then like Perryman's talking, like, and you see the mic right here, and then blah blah blah, whatever, whatever. Okay, I'm done, later, guys, and then he leaves. And then here comes Colton Miller, and he's like fucking like out of the fucking screen, like he is so much fucking bigger than anyone
like,
else.
Come on, cameraman, like adjust.
Yeah, he's like, you saw from like here down. I'm like, oh, dude, damn, he's that much bigger.
Don't get me started on Raiders social media and their like production crew. Like it was rough,
man.
Don't get me started. Another kind of like look, like we're all kind of wondering what the O-line's going to look like. Dylan Parman, third round pick, is currently lining up with the second team at left guard and with the third team at center. So that makes it look like you're thinking that's like Andre James is going to be like, they're kind of looking at him to be the starter. And then like John Simpson's kind of right there. So they're not like really, and again, it's only 2 days and there's no pads, but the way they're lining him up currently, he's only playing center with the third string, which kind of raises an eyebrow a little bit.
Well, you have to look at a couple things here. He hasn't played center, but you know, one game in the Senior Bowl, right?
So shouldn't that mean he should get the most reps at it?
Not necessarily. Well, yeah. I mean, yeah, if this was a system that everyone knew already, yeah, you would do that. But you have to install the system and the guys that have been there. And then, you know, because they have the experience, they play in the league already. And, you know, once training camp starts, then you start, you know, wiggling around with the starting lineup. One thing that Carmen Brasillo, Coach Brasillo did say is he's not interested in getting the best five. He's interested in getting like the best eight. Like I want the best eight. I don't want the best five is, you know, you don't need the best five. You need the best eight. Injuries, you know, matchups, stuff like that. And that was something that kind of stood out to me when he was talking about the offensive line and rolling the best guys out there. He's not looking for the best five guys. He's looking for the best combination of eight.
Yeah. Keeping your five starting linemen all season is like finding an honest politician. Like it just doesn't exist. Like you never have five O linemen make it 17 games.
Such a demanding position, man. I've never done anything so hard than play offensive line. It's just like you're constantly getting beat on constantly. It's like a car crash. Like you could be a receiver or a running back and not do shit on a play. Like if you're an offensive lineman, you're fucking getting hit. Like you're hitting, getting hit. Everything. Every single play.
No, be a linebacker. That's the hardest because you're doing the same shit, but you're doing it against linemen because you're the little guy. So Trayvon Morig, there's only like true like guaranteed starters in the deep with the DBs, and they're both second year players. Nate Hobbs, Trayvon Morig. Morig at free safety, Hobbs at slot corner. It's pretty safe to say it's the only two guaranteed DB spots. And what was our biggest beef with Trayvon Morig is the best, like you never hear his name, which is a good and bad thing. He's not getting beat by the steep pass, but he's also not making big plays. He was a Gus Bradley free safety. Don't screw up. And he did a great job of that. So he got a pick off of Stidham in practice. And he said that one of his big goals is to get more interceptions and
to catch the ball that hits you in the hands. That one.
Yeah, exactly. And it looks like he's making some improvements in that realm. If he could become, I'm curious what Graham's going to make out of him, right? Do they want him to keep doing his strength, which is be a free safety that keeps big mistakes from happening? Or it's like, you know what? You see a guy making a cut? Go for the ball, not the tackle. I'm very curious what they're going to make of him.
Graham's secondary is very aggressive. Yeah. Very aggressive. So I wouldn't necessarily think that he would give the okay for them to be reckless, but I do think the scheme is going to set up to where he can be a little bit more aggressive because he's going to probably have a little bit, he's not going to be put on an island like that covering a huge amount of space by himself very often. Is it Morig or is it Merrig? Because I've heard it both ways.
I've been saying Morig, but I also mispronounce players' names constantly.
Yeah, that's something that you do, which is kind of funny.
I still say Abrams sometimes.
Abrams, yeah, I know you do that. Hankin, you flip it.
Hankin, yeah. I add S's randomly. Like if I'm playing Scrabble, I want to be able to add an S for triple points every time. That's how
you're like if
I want multiple fans. Abrams on my team and Hankins is on my team. I want like more of them, so I add an S to make them plural.
You're like the wrestling version of like Pat Patterson. He was like from Montreal, so he had a big Canadian accent, and he would always like, the crowd's gonna go banana. And you missed the S, and so that's you, like Abrams. But then the way it's Hankins, you say Hankin.
Yeah, I don't fuck with S's. Another note. So they've had two guys working catching punts. Backup corner Darius Phillips and Hunter Renfrow as well. I like the idea of Hunter Renfrow even being a starting slot guy, even being, let's say, he gets the extension as a very high paid guy. I still want him returning punts. I think that's so many times you're like, whoa, I don't want him to get hurt. Like, no, don't guys on special teams, they might get hurt. It's like, dude, it's a legit play as anything. It's like, all right, well, then don't throw to him if you're worried about him getting hurt. Oh, have him only play two downs a series because you don't want him to get hurt. It's like, no, if he's gonna be a great asset to us as a punt returner, use him. Like once you start saying I don't want him to get hurt, like you can apply that anywhere.
Yeah, I like Renfrow having the ball in his hands in a little bit of a scramble situation. He's been shown going across the middle where it's a little bit more confusing. DBs are following their guy, they're keying in on their guy, and then you see Renfrow darting through. He's been known to gouge, and just so close, not last year really, but the year before, gets really close on maybe two or three punt returns where it was just one guy just tripped him up just a little bit, and he wasn't able to return it all the way back. But yeah, I mean, he's really good with the ball in his hand, so yeah, if that happens, I'm not going to be mad at it if he's returning punts.
So with our line, Denzel Good is still injured. So he's there, but he's not practicing. Leatherwood, they've had him work right tackle and right guard so far. It looks like, and I'm predicting, that the starting five this season will be the same as the starting five last season. Miller, Simpson, James, Good, Leatherwood. Based on how they're doing it, I feel like they're going to go with the exact same five guys. That's my prediction. I'm not predicting with a bullet, but it with only 2 days of camp, that's kind of what I think it looks like.
Yeah. Although Simpson did have a better end to the season, I just think that Parham is just a better player, a more versatile player than Simpson is. Mm-hmm. And I think that he can probably take that left guard spot.
Not center.
No, I don't think center. Not yet. Not yet. Center's got a lot of responsibility. I think that's a little bit too much to ask from a guy who hasn't played the position Senior Bowl is not a competitive game. Let's just freaking call it what it is. Okay. You can't do certain things defensively, and you can't play, you call certain plays offensively. So I don't think that's going to be, that wouldn't be setting him up for success to throw him into center right now. I think the left guard spot, have him play next to our best offensive lineman in Miller, and I think that'll be the best spot for him.
Yeah, I think Parker's going to be our swing tackle. I think Parham will be the backup guard and center. Like I think he's in that top eight you were talking about. Like
mm-hmm, yeah, yeah. So these five: Parker, Parham, Munger,
and then probably like Lester Cotton, maybe as the other guard.
No,
no. Jermaine, maybe.
Yeah, Luminor, probably.
Luminor, maybe.
Well, because that
number eight spot, I think, is the hardest spot to predict. I think.
Yeah, because you can change
maybe on purpose. Because then they're all, yeah. Well, and that's the purpose too. Is like all these guys, like, hey, you could be the number eight dude suited up and be ready to go, like, bust your ass in camp. That's, if there's one takeaway from this, Raiders players, just bust your ass in camp. Good things will happen. So that's it for news and notes. with training camp. So the Broncos are finally owned by somebody. The Denver Broncos entered a sale with the Walton Penner Family Ownership Group, which is the Walmart bajillionaires, like the richest family.
The fucking falillionaires.
Right? They're getting $4.65 billion. That is a record price paid for a North American sports franchise.
It's a lot of cheddar, baby. It's a lot of cheddar.
It's a lot. That's a crazy number. So, okay, you know, they're owned now. I also like, I think it's great because Broncos fans look like they're Walmart customers anyway. So it's perfect that Walmart owns the Broncos.
I've never seen so many people wearing the same jersey that also wear those gray, scrunchy ankle sweats with no pockets than a fucking Broncos. Like, I've seen so many Broncos shit with just the gray, saggy, like, drawstring doesn't really work all that great.
Yeah.
Scrunchy ankle fucking sweats.
A lot of like, I'm with stupid t-shirts, like pointing one direction, you know?
I'm the boss. It's like the duck with the freaking flat bill and like.
Now here's the question. Do Walmart stores nationwide all carry like Broncos gear in like the premier spot? Or is it like, all right, if you're in Kansas City, it's the Chiefs stuff and you're Boston Patriots stuff. But now Broncos gear going to be in every single Walmart now?
I mean,
because that's a crazy network to own. Like, we talk all the time about how Mark Davis, like, he's just Raiders and that's it. Treats it like a mom and pa, you know, doesn't make any money elsewhere. And that's opposite of what the NFL wants. Like, the NFL loves the fact that a massive company, the richest family in America, is now owning an NFL team because now it's no longer that entity is like pulling money from the NFL to make them rich. It's like the other way around. Like, they now can make their franchise expand in ways that no other owner can because they have more giant retail spots than anybody.
I don't know, man. That's kind of a good question. I really don't think that they're going to promote the Broncos in outside markets. I do think they're going to promote the shit out of them in Denver, in the Broncos markets for sure. Yeah. Colorado, the Utah area, places like that.
So if the Broncos sold for $4.65 billion, what would the Raiders go for?
More than that. I'll tell you that much.
Yeah.
Closer to five for sure.
New stadium, new market, better market.
It's a better brand. It's just a better, more global brand.
Honestly, I feel like the actual NFL franchise is not irrelevant. It always matters. But I feel like it matters so much less than when. Like, the Panthers were the highest purchase franchise before because they were just the latest, right? The latest, it's like whatever the latest team is going to be the biggest ones. Like, the poorest franchise in the NFL, if they're the next team sold in 3 years, it'll be more than what the Broncos sold for. It's just being only an NFL franchise. Now, again, like, if it's the Cowboys and the Browns, right, the Cowboys will go clearly for a lot more. But I feel like it's just time. Like, whatever the latest – it's like quarterback contracts, right? Whoever the latest one is going to be paid the most. Whatever the latest franchise is sold for is going to go for the most.
Okay, so here's the deal. We're from Southern California. We're a transplant city. A lot of people move to Southern California. So you see a lot of fans from other teams. Okay. That's why I see Broncos fans. It's because it's like people from other areas move here. Okay. How many Broncos fans are you finding in like South Carolina, in fucking Georgia? Like, you're not finding Broncos fans out there. Okay. Yeah. You find Raiders fans fucking everywhere.
Anywhere west of the Rockies. You have Raiders fans are either like the second at worst, the third biggest fan base.
Like, I went to a Dolphin Raider game at the Dolphins in Miami, and the Carson Palmer TJ Houshmandzadeh game, and we took a shuttle to the stadium with these guys from South Carolina, fucking hardcore Raider fans. Like, and it's not just in the States; it's global. You're not finding a bunch of Broncos fans in like England or in Asia or in Europe. Like, you find a ton of Raider fans all throughout the world. And that's why it's good. It's a bigger global brand. So that's going to give it a bigger bump.
I want to touch on this briefly, not Raiders news, but this Deshaun Watson.
Speaking of touching,
I want to I want to just I want to end this show happily. This
for sure, dude.
This Deshaun Watson
times
shit,
at least.
This Deshaun Watson shit is getting nuts.
Fucking stupid, like, dude.
It's getting crazy. What is it up? What's the number of girls it's up to now?
24 civil cases.
24 civil cases at Deshaun Watson. It's looking worse and worse for him. It's looking worse and worse for that historically crazy big contract that the Browns made to get Deshaun Watson.
Fully guaranteed.
So get this. Thanks to Roy for pointing this out. It's $194 million in dead cap if the Browns cut Deshaun. Like, if it gets,
yeah.
And that's obviously where they're not going to cut him, but it's if this gets terrible, because it's not criminal, it's all a civil case, which means he's not going to go to jail. But I think he's finally the first like NFL player above the law, because the contract is so big that even if he ends up paying out all these girls, he's still going to play. I don't think the NFL is going to be like, $194 million in dead money. Like, we're just we're never going to let him play.
Plus, it's a bad precedent to set to, like, give some kind of exemption from the league to the team because of some shit that come out during the civil trial. But, dude, man, that's a lot. So, you want to get to the reports?
Please.
Because these fucking reports are ludicrous. So, okay.
Luda.
So look, New York Times reports this. Deshaun Watson used the Texans facilities, right? Mm-hmm. And hotel rooms. Hotel rooms provided by the Texans. And the Texans head of security. What's his name? Brent Nakara. He provided Deshaun Watson with an NDA. Like, he put it in his locker. Like, here, have him sign this. Okay. 66 different massage therapists in 17 months. That's almost one per week, a different one every single week. That, my friends, is some hardcore tugging.
How do you, like, even if you just want to get jerked off every single time you get a massage, how do you not just find like two or three good ones and just stick to it? Like, all right, these girls are down. You know, I love their technique. They're going to be discreet. Like, how are you, like, I understand if it's a chick you're trying to bang, like, you want a variety, but like, how many different types of hand jobs can you get where you're going to risk your career? You know what I mean?
Look, man, here's the deal. And this is just what I'm into. All right. So I would probably I would probably have four. Okay.
Okay.
Now, number one, they'd all have to be a little bit thicker in the butt area, but I'm just saying this. You have the curvy Latina, right? Okay. You have the Asian with the perky nipples, okay? Mm-hmm. You got the big titty blonde, and then you have the black chick with the long nails. That covers all my bases.
Yeah.
I need four, a good rotation of four.
See, my hand jobs, I'm laying back and my eyes are closed. Like, it can be an 80-year-old woman, but if she's got a good, like, strong Western-style reverse hand grip, like, I'm on board. You know what I mean?
They all have a different technique, bro. Everyone's like, it's like we all eat rice in every single country, but it's just a little bit different.
Deshaun Watson.
God damn, man.
You ready to do some What a Windbags?
Fuck yeah, dude. Get off Deshaun
Watson. Let's get out of here before we get canceled. Keep Cushion Raider 808. Love the name. I love John Madden, but damn, why do they got him looking like Trump? I kind of see him looking like a cartoony like a comb young over Trump.
As fuck. That looks like a comb over. He looks
wavy front.
Yeah. He looks kind of a mix between like John Candy and Donald Trump. He should have been holding a turducken instead of that football.
He just looks so happy though on that Madden cover. Like, look at him. All joy.
Yeah. And it's like, you know, thanking him. Thanks, coach. Boom. He should have been a little boom pow. Something in there, right? You know, but yeah, I dig it. You know, he looks a little Trumpish. I'm not gonna lie.
Well, like, I think they went the right way with it. Like, let's go cartoony without being too cartoony, and it's a young John. Like, you know, like whenever you go to a funeral, I've been watching a lot of Sopranos, so I'm seeing a lot of like funerals. Uh-oh. You know, us when like it's like a you only know this person as an old man and he dies at like 87. But the picture of him is always him in like at like 21 in the Army, right? Or like 23 when he got married. I like when they did that with John Madden. Like once you pass away, it's like, I don't know this John Madden. Like I was born in 83, right? Like I mostly know the old broadcasting John Madden. So it's like, I don't really recognize him, but that's like the true him, you know? Like that's the true looking John Madden.
The tucked in polo shirt, the bell bottom fucking polyester pants, the light blue polyester pants he was wearing. Yeah, that was legit.
Mana Tangitawu. Mana Tangitawu. Tangitawu.
Anyway, you're terrible.
With head coach Josh McDaniels calling the plays on offense, quarterback Derek Carr, number four, will have a breakout season and throw for over 5,000 yards. What are the odds of him throwing 5,000 yards next season, Soto? Regular season, 17 games.
I don't think so. I think
it's a tough number to get to.
Yeah, here's the deal. Last year, Derek Carr raised his average yard per attempt, right? Mm-hmm. And he threw the ball a fucking ton, and he still didn't get to 5,000 yards.
Yeah.
Getting to 5,000 yards in a Josh McDaniels system is going to be very difficult because Josh McDaniels does like to be a lot more balanced.
Hopefully the defense is better and he's not playing hero ball from behind every fourth quarter.
He's not having to fucking fling the ball 35 times a game.
Yeah.
I personally don't want him to throw 5,000 yards.
How many times do you want him throwing the ball a game?
25 to 30.
I think much higher. With these receivers, with Devontae, Waller, and Renfro, I think 40 is a good number or higher.
Dude, that's fucking ridiculous. Receivers? You don't want him dropping back 40 fucking times, man. You don't want
a lot of three-step drops, little screens to those guys.
Dude, he fumbled against the fucking Bengals on a three-step drop because he hitched twice. So I don't want to do that. No, 40 times is ridiculous. You're smoking crack right now. I don't want Derek Carr's. I don't want my quarterback at all dropping back 40 times a game.
How many targets do you want Devontae Adams, Hunter Renfro, and Darren Waller getting every game? Because if it's 25 times a game, they're getting like five targets, six targets each.
Make them count, baby. That's all. Other parts. If you throw the ball 30 times a game, right? Okay.
Well, Adam Ballerino.
Get your quarterback fucking killed.
I think our O line is fine. I would bring in Ndamukong Suh and T.Y. Hilton, and I think we'd be set.
No, T.Y. Hilton is washed, bro. He can't stay healthy. Even when he is playing, maybe because he's playing hurt, he's not nearly as effective as he has been. Mm-hmm. If he was anywhere near what he was in the past, the Colts would have kept him. This is not the time right now in this part of the offseason to just add quote unquote just depth guys. Those guys are going to be there, late cuts and stuff like that. This is when you're able to sign guys that for whatever reason haven't been signed by somebody else. But you're looking for starters right now. Sue would be a good get. I don't think we're going to do it because not only did we sign a lot of free agents playing the hit place position, excuse me. We drafted two guys to play his position. So I think we're pretty set on that part.
I'm not convinced the O-line is set and you don't need to actively try to improve. But I do think the Raiders think that. I think McDaniels and Ziegler are like, you know what? If another good like right tackle is available for the right number, we'll get him. But I don't think they're like actively trying to make that a priority. I don't think they are. I think they should, but I don't think they are.
Look, I will amend my passing attempts per game if we go out and get another big target, another guy that could be a number two receiver, that could play that number two receiver role.
Who do you think will be our number? Let's say that they don't add another receiver. Who do you think our number three receiver will be?
Oh fuck, dude! It could be any one of them, man. I it's a toss up. It really is.
You know, honestly, what I want. I want
to be Raiders to be Deshaun Watson a year and a half ago.
Well, this is the thing. You don't have to be a bajillion dollar NFL quarterback to get two hand jobs a week at a massage parlor. Like it's not.
That's true. You can go to Garden Grove and get that shit.
He's not living the life. He's just like, that's what like old men do.
He does. He's
so weird.
What's his name? Robert Kraft is like fucking amateur.
And he still got caught.
Well, dude, he's getting all these young chicks, bro. You have to go to the Asian spots. They keep their mouths shut.
So honestly, like my best setup really is one running back, two tight ends. I think that's the best lineup, and you get Foster Moreau in there. Like I'd rather have Foster Moreau on the field than Keelan Cole or DeMarcus Robinson. Like I think he's better on the, and have Waller either like two tight end sets or lined up outside.
I mean, before last season, I would have agreed with you. I was very disappointed in Foster Moreau's year last year.
He was disappointing when he went in the big shoes.
When we needed him the most, man. When Waller went down, he fucking disappeared. So hopefully with
these he's also been super successful as an afterthought, right? Like when he's the number one tight end, he disappoints. When he's the number two tight end, he's pretty good. So I feel, and that would be his role, right? He'd be like the fifth target. Like no defense is scheming to stop Foster Moreau. You know what I mean?
But it's a difference. It's a difference between being a backup to a starter as opposed to having a scheme where you start, even if you are the number two tight end. Yeah.
It's hard to thrive in Darren Waller. Like if you just plug Foster Moreau in the Darren Waller role, it's not gonna work. He's nowhere near close to it. But if you're like, all right, you're a number two tight end and you're good. It's nice to have another blocker on the guy that can block, but number two tight end behind Devontae, Darren, and Hunter. I'd rather have Foster there than, unless you really need speed, right? You need DeMarcus Robinson to like take the top off. Like,
no, I agree with that. But I honestly do think that McDaniels is going to go and scheme up some things to use. I don't think you have to use decoy so much for Renfro, but if you decoy enough, you can get Foster Moreau a lot of good looks.
Yeah. Well, we shoved a lot of shit into this 1 hour and 11 minutes of podcasting and YouTubing. Good for us.
Yay.
So I got like 3 hours of sleep last night. Mm-hmm. I'm exhausted, but if I don't get up and do something, I'm going to fall asleep. So I'm going to go work out. Then I'm going to edit, and this will come out. Good show, buddy.
Thanks, buddy. You too.
You have a good one. And until next time,
knock on wood if you're with me.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Autumn Windbags. We really appreciate it. Make sure you check us out on YouTube for all that bonus goodies that you love so much. We're on social media, of course, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Give us a shout. Check us out. Until next time, later.